Coming to you from Indianapolis, Indiana, the gaming capital of the world, it's the silver episode of Game On with Cody and John.
On this episode's big deal,
new edition.
Is it time to upgrade to the newest version of your favorite game? We'll talk about it.
And on this episode's Buy, Try, or Deny,
it's a double feature, Amuse Amaze and the Wickedly Errant game system,
Tua.
All this and much more on Game On with Cody and John.
Well, howdy gamers, it is Game On with Cody and John. I'm Cody.
And I'm John. Welcome to the Uncommon Podcast for the Common Gamer. We're a podcast about all sorts of tabletop games, role-playing games, board games, and card games. Coming to you from rainy Indianapolis, Indiana.
Waterlogged Indianapolis, Indiana. We had quite the deluge today.
It about blew our house over.
it got real dark, but I like the storm, so it didn't matter.
Fortunately, we still have some electrical power left to run the soundboard here to bring you the silver episode.
Number 25, for those of you keeping score at home.
25, yeah. That's your eight. No, you're 26.
I'm 26 years of age.
Wow.
Okay, so you're still a venerable podcaster.
You're still older than the podcast.
That's
now.
True. That's true. Well, we've got a great episode lined up for you today. We're going to be talking about new editions of games, and not just role playing games, for board games too.
That's right. There's been a lot of companies that have reproduced their own game and other companies that have reproduced and reprinted games. We're just going to talk about the different situations where you might want to get a new version of a game. And we'll be specifically talking about a particular edition change that you, are, I'm sure, as a gamer are aware of.
Yes, we will take our sides on the great edition wars between Dungeons & Dragons 3.x and 4.0, amongst other things.
We're stepping in late in this discussion, but...
Well,
you have to have
good time to evaluate. And give our impressions. And we've got a great buy, try, or deny.
Yeah, we're doing a double feature this time. We're going to do kind of two mini buy, tries, or tries, or denies, something like that. And we're going to be looking at a role-playing game and a board game.
So I like it.
We'll be looking at the Wickedly Errant game system, or WEGS, from GameWick Games, and also Amuse Amaze, which is a great word puzzle race sort of a game.
Hedge game.
Yeah. But so lots to talk about. And of course, we got Gen Con coming up, so I'm sure we'll be all giddy about that. So,
yes, sir.
As always, our episode starts off with Game On Inbox, which starts
immediately. The Game On Inbox.
Send us an email at gameoninbox@gmail.com.
Do it. Well, we have double-clicked the Game On Inbox, and we are here to give you what we consider to be the greatest in gaming news. But without further ado, we have to give credit to our sponsor, a.k.a. The Man, and that would be...
That would be Dan the Man and Sarah the Woman.
Woman. Nicely done.
From Myriad Games. So we want to thank Myriad Games for sponsoring our show and just tell you listeners a little bit more about this great, friendly, professional game store.
Professional!
And we're brought to you by Myriad Games on behalf of friendly professional game stores everywhere. It's a great online and brick-and-mortar store in Salem, New Hampshire, and they've got a lot of online stuff that's fun for you gamers no matter where you might live, including what they call their Myriad Gamer membership. They deal in a currency known as Myriad Money.
It's doing better than the U.S. dollar right now.
I think so. Against the yen, it's not quite as strong. But, there's several levels of membership where you can kind of buy this Myriad Money. Dan and Sarah provide a whole bunch of really fun incentives for joining up the program. And so it's a great organization, and we love the fact that they're sponsoring us. They're just great folks. And let's hear once again a little bit more about Myriad Games.
Greetings from Myriad Games, your friendly professional game store. Myriad Games offers a wide variety of family fun for everyone. We don't just sell pieces of cardboard and plastic, we sell fun. We're proud to have the opportunity to serve as your friendly professional game store, whether locally here in New England or anywhere around the world through MyriadGames.com. We also offer a Myriad Gamer membership for our regular customers. We're proud to present Myriad Games presentations, available through iTunes and the show links at myriadgames.com. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes to receive your complimentary pair of Myriad dice and to be entered in drawings for free Myriad gear and $100 of Myriad money. Your feedback is very important to us. Please email us through myriadgames.com with your comments, questions, suggestions, abuse, and general ridicule. For more about a myriad of games, visit your friendly professional game store and be sure to visit us online at myriadgames.com. Myriad Games. So many games, so little time. So start playing.
All right, well, thanks, Dan, from Myriad Games.
We got to make a pilgrimage out to Salem, New Hampshire sometime.
I think so. Why not? We got
to. I don't know what else there is to do there. We got the game on jet. But it's got to go somewhere.
Fueled up and ready to go. All right. Yeah. All right. Well, watch out, Dan. We're coming for you. I mean, we're coming to you. Anyway, let's move on.
I'm going to tag out John there, and we're going to talk about some games we've played, as we are apt to do. And one great thing is, if you go back quite a few episodes, back to the Old Guard episode, what number was that, John? Yeah, I'm testing
you. Rain Man here. That would be, I believe, episode 14.
Wow, nicely done. You got a chance to meet a close friend of ours, James Gasway, and he was actually in town from Florida, and we got to play quite a bit of games with him, and that was a It was a good time.
It was a lot of fun. We got to teach him a couple of games, mm-hmm. and he got to teach us one.
Yep.
So we played Dominion, and we played plain vanilla Dominion, because we didn't want to pull in all that crazy intrigue stuff.
Sure. You got to start small.
That's right. So we played that one, and we also played a game of Kingsburg. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just received in the mail the Kingsburg expansion to Forge a Realm, mm-hmm. and we'll probably talk about that in our next episode.
To Forge a Profit.
Exactly. To forge more money. And It's a really neat expansion, I think. I think it's a little overpriced.
a smidge.
But we'll talk about that in the next episode once we get a chance to play it. We just played regular Kingsburg with Mr. Gasaway because he had never played the game before. We didn't want to add too many complications.
Still undefeated, listeners.
It is amazing. I have no idea what kind of special... Actually, Cody kind of revealed his secret. So
it's not going to matter.
Next time we play, I'm going to try it and see if it works. But
that's fine.
We'll throw all that expansion stuff in there. We'll see how well
you then do. I'll start losing.
Excellent.
But I'll still be undefeated at Kingsburg.
Not Kingsburg with expansion.
Exactly.
Okay, fine. Put as many asterisks as you want on there, Barry Bonds.
And James also taught us the old Steve Jackson Games classic Illuminati.
Yeah.
Which I had played years and years ago when I first started game, but I've kind of forgotten the rules. And it was okay. It was fine.
It seemed like there was a lot of rules for what it was.
Yeah, it seemed a little complicated for what it was. But it was still a fun time, and it had some good humor in it. So.
Yeah, definitely.
And
yeah.
I won that as well.
Did you really?
I did.
Oh, that was a mercy win right there.
Well, I do what I can.
We haven't had a chance to go and play games in sort of a different atmosphere. We're used to playing games just in Cody's game room or at my kitchen table or whatever, but we decided to go down to a local pub and played a game of Dominion there. So that was a lot of fun to be able to drink some Irish beer and eat some, was it Bangers?
Bangers.
And some mustard there and play some Dominion, which I won that one.
You did. And we actually got some comments from some of the staff that I think they were familiar with. It sounded like they were familiar with RPGs, but maybe not card games.
Yeah.
Because they came over and they asked some questions, but they seemed to know what it was. So, that was kind of neat.
I'm always tempted to bring out the cards and start handing out the game on cards.
Oh, you got to.
I just feel like such a dork doing that.
Well, hey, we're doing a gaming podcast, so we're already there, buddy.
All right. Dorks as it is.
That's right.
All right. Well, some other games that I've been playing recently include Say Anything from North Star Games. I had an opportunity to play that at a church function, and it was with a group of kind of young 20-somethings couples, some folks that are kind of my age, a little bit younger, and they're the cool kids. They're the cool kids at the table, right. You know, that when you bring out a game, they kind of shake their head and go, oh, okay, yeah, we could play a game, I guess, you know. But once we got them into the game, we played a full 8-player game of Say Anything. And that's just a game that I've never been in an environment where that game doesn't work.
Oh, yeah. Like, no one says, no, that's not real fun.
Yeah. And everyone, we played through one round, and when we were done with it, and I said, yeah, we played through one round, they said, is that it? Can we go again? Well, sure we can. And so it creates a lot of – that game's great for creating a lot of inside jokes, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, do you remember when you gave that answer? And so my favorite one from the question from the night was, someone asked the question, in my opinion, what's the most annoying thing about being a woman? And this was a woman asking the question, and lots of different questions. There was, you know, birth control and, you know, time of the month, things like that.
Whoa.
And this one, my friend Jake, he wrote on the card and he kept it kind of seeking, threw it out there, and he wrote submitting.
Nice.
So that generated a lot of laughter. So
I I played once where one of my friends put being wrong.
No,
the views of Cody Surrender, not the views of Game On with Cody and John, but
we do not endorse those views.
It was really funny.
Well, and the girl who was playing Amanda, she said, well, no, I'm not going to pick that one because I don't submit, so it's not annoying.
There you go.
That was a lot of fun, though. So played just some stuff around the house, played Rumus.
I played Rumus as well.
Did you really?
First time.
Oh, okay. What'd you think of it?
It's all right. I like Blockus better, but Rumus is fine. I'm not very good at it. I'm better at Blockus.
So it's sort of a three-dimensional version of Blockus. It's fun for little kids, I think, that just like to build stuff.
Yeah.
And for my son Ethan, it's real good for sort of spatial relationships and knowing where he can put pieces and where he can't. So he definitely understands the rules. I beat him soundly. But...
Oh, nice job. You beat a 6-year-old. Good work.
Hey, got to take him where I can. I can't.
That's an achievement.
All right. All right, well, that's games we've been playing, and it's time to kick it off into some news in the inbox. And, Cody, what have you got as far as gaming news?
The final version of the Pathfinder RPG, it was released kind of beginning of August here, and it's already sold out of its first run between pre-orders and store orders and things Paizo's held aside for their Gen Con run. They've completely sold out of their first printing run.
My goodness.
I think that's a very impressive feat and kind of gives some credence to them because they'd been kind of looked at as far as the edition wars, as it were. It's kind of like this third party, you know. It's it's kind of based on 3.5, but it has enough changes to where it's its own game. But it's really picking up some steam, and they're launching the organized play, the Pathfinder Society at Gen Con this year, and they're really making a push to kind of get that to be the new alternative for people who liked the old style of D&D but want something fresh and want new material at their gaming stores. So,
and did you say that they would have copies available at Gen? They set aside copies for Gen Con.
They have their Pathfinder core book, which is kind of like if in D&D terms, think a player's handbook and a DMG combined. So the thing's like 575 pages. It's this just thick tome, and it's $50, which for the price and the pages, that's really not that bad.
Yeah.
But the best thing is you can get a PDF for $10.
Really?
So really, if your gaming group's running it, I would probably suggest have one person get the hard copy, and then if
everybody
people interested, they can just PDFs.
Yeah.
They can just pay $10 and be in.
Good idea.
Yeah. So it's I may pick up a copy. It's as we'll talk about later with RPGs, kind of where I'm sitting, but it's looking very intriguing to me, and it looks like they've kind of got all their ducks in a row. So
I remember that, wasn't it last year that the Pathfinder beta was a big line every day.
Yeah, and it sold out.
Yeah, it sold out just about every day. They had a certain number of copies each day that they were giving out. And, so it looks kind of interesting. I'm not familiar with the setting. Is it still like fantasy?
Yeah.
Or does it have some kind of different theme or setting laid over top of it, or is it still kind of D&D fantasy?
It's still D&D fantasy. If anything, it maybe has a dash of kind of a pulp feel to it, but in the end, it's still kind of high D&D fantasy, but they really do a good job with the art style and everything of really making it their own, and I think it's got some staying power. The selling out really surprised me, and, you know, they had a pretty good print run, and just to see that they sold out so quickly, I think... it shows that RPG gamers are looking for something different out there.
I think the field's wide open a lot more than it used to be far as for indie publishers and for smaller publishers.
I think Wizards is the one that blew the door open, and rather unintentionally. But.
The Wizards bashing podcast. Let's go to
sorry. Wizards is great, but they dropped the ball.
Yeah. All right, well, another piece of news in the area of board games is coming from Z-Man Games, who have announced that they're going to be releasing a game in October called Campaign Manager 2008. And this is going to be designed by the same folks that brought you 1960, The Making of the President, one of my very favorite board games.
Yeah.
Jason Matthews and Christian... Pipe down over there.
Yeah.
Pipe down.
Yeah.
Jason Matthews and Christian Leonard. And as you might guess from the title, this is going to be a two-player game that puts you in the role of a campaign manager to presidential candidates John McCain and Barack Obama. So it's actually going to be those two candidates. And as in real life, many of the states in the U.S. are locked into supporting one candidate or the other, and so that leaves you to fight over 20 battleground states. And so each state's going to be worth some victory points that's equal to its electoral votes. And there's going to be an issue track and all those typical kind of campaigning political elements that are in like 1916, things like that. So it sounds like it's going to be pretty interesting for me, at least. I know Cody's not showing any
spoiler
interest whatsoever.
Obama wins.
But
hate to ruin your fun.
Well, you know, but as a non-Obama voter, Cody, you have the opportunity to turn the tide in this game.
Yeah, it probably won't work.
Okay, Captain Sunshine. All right, so
I'm not good at these games.
So that's something that's coming from Z-Man Games that should be available in October. And boy, anything that's available in October, I'm hoping shows up at Gen Con, because you know, there's a lot of October releases that I think.
Tell you, I mean, this is not about the stupid 1960 sequel or anything, but if Battlestar Galactica expansion is at Gen Con, I will proudly stand in line with John as he buys it, and then we will play it.
Oh, that's great. You want to loan me a couple of dollars? And...
Yeah.
Okay. No, no, probably not. Right, that's
I'm going to buy Pathfinder, probably, and that's $50. And
okay.
And that's some back surgery I'm going to have to do from carrying it around.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I'll have my car nearby, so you can put it in my car if you need to. All right, well, so that one other piece of kind of RPG and board game news is in the realm of the internets. And that is the launch of what we thought was going to be called RPG Geek, which is the RPG equivalent of Board Game Geek. Mm-hmm. But they've given it a different name. It's actually going to be called RPG. What is it? Geek-do?
I think it's Geek-do because there's a line over the O.
Oh,
so it's
okay.
A long O.
That wasn't a real great choice for a name if it's something that people can't pronounce.
Well, it's from the people of Board Game Geek, so what do you expect?
Okay.
Sorry.
Where is this coming from?
I don't
from?
Know. I'm not big on the Board Game Geek. I'll probably get more involved in the, I'm just calling it the RPG Geek, but
okay, yeah.
I'm not hip enough or knowledgeable enough in Board Game Geek to swing for the fences.
Well, now there's a playground for you to play.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So yeah, the RPG version of Board Game Geek, which is going to be rpg.geekdo, GEEKDO.com. And if you go there, and if you're familiar with Board Game Geek at all, it's going to look a lot like Board Game Geek, except it's just the database is role-playing games, and they've already got it seeded with about 1,300 different role-playing game items, and with pictures and reviews and all that kind of stuff. So if you're an RPG fan,
woo!
Then that's the place to go. And I went over there. It just launched on Friday, this mm-hmm. past Friday, the 31st of July. Mm-hmm. And I was amazed by how much content is actually there. There's geek lists already up. There's lots of reviews. There's lots of people who've already rated particular games. So I think there's a lot of demand there. So hopefully it'll grow just like Board Game Geek did.
Hopefully. And maybe I'll get an avatar over there. I never got one.
You need some geek gold.
I know.
Send some geek gold to Cody.
Thank you. All right. And if you remember last episode, we had a contest. The winner of this contest would receive the brand new expansion to Wits and Wagers. And since Gen Con's coming up, we asked the question, since it has to be a Wits and Wagers style question, we asked how many events total were there at Gen Con 2005, the first Gen Con that John and I went to. Now, some of you are clever folk, and you found our secret.
You found the source, yeah.
You found the source. So we had to draw randomly from those of you who found the double secret website that lists every event from Gen Con 2005, and we came up with one winner who will be getting this fantastic expansion.
Yep. Let me start off by saying that the number of events at Gen Con this last year, not this last year, in 2005 when we first went.
Like I said.
Like you just said.
Thank you.
Was 5,347.
Wow.
And where we got that from is there's actually, and I'll go ahead and reveal the secret, there's a really nice website called gencon.highprogrammer.com. And I don't think it's affiliated directly with Gen Con. I think it's just a guy who has put together this site, and he's found some way to draw from the actual database mm-hmm. from Gen Con. So it's a really nice interface.
Indispensable, I think, if you're a regular Gen Con attendee.
Yeah, they've really improved the interface, the Ruby system for Gen Con itself. So it's better than it was. But still, the High Programmer site, I think, is the place to go if you're looking up something. And so we just went to 2005, which is the earliest year that they had listed there, added up all the events, and that's where we got 5,347. And apparently several of you also did that.
Nicely done.
Right. So anyway, of the folks that were that got exactly right, the winner of our contest and the winner of the Wits and Wagers Expansion Pack 1 is...
I don't know what that was.
Mr. Eric Gustafson.
Nicely done. Well done.
From... Belchertown, Massachusetts.
So. Belchertown.
I think that's
we'll swing by there when we go to Salem, New Hampshire.
There you go. Yeah, hey, Erica, go to Myriad Games.
Do it.
All right, so we'll be sending you out a copy of the Wits and Wagers Expansion Pack 1. Eric, if you could send us your full mailing address, we will get that game out to you. Craig, congratulations.
Congratulations. And, of course, he's going to send that to the Game On Inbox at...
GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
Where you can send anything besides contest entries. You can send us mail, reviews, snarky comments, whatever you would like. And you can reach us there. There are also other ways you can reach us.
That's right. You can check out our website at GameOnPodcast.com, where you can comment on our episodes. We've got some game reviews there. We've got a slow snowball of game reviews and other content.
Got some new features on there now.
Exactly. Yeah, we've got two main new features on the website that we'd like to talk to you about for this episode. One is the return of the donation button.
Yay!
So you'll be able to donate and support the show via PayPal. Just click on that button on the website. It's on the right side there. And we appreciate any support you're able to throw at us. The other thing, and probably the more exciting of the two things, is that we have registered our site with Feedburner, mm-hmm. and that will allow you, the listener, to or the viewer,
you the viewer,
to subscribe to our website. Now, we've always encouraged you to subscribe to our podcast, and we would still encourage you to do that via iTunes.
Do it twice.
Or, yeah.
Just to make sure.
Makes it even nicer. But you can actually also subscribe to our site now. So on the right side of the website, you'll see a thing where you can enter your email address to subscribe. And what that'll do is if you click on that, it'll send you to a place where you'll get an email that will ask you to confirm and you enter a password in or something like that. It's a real simple process, and it's not going to generate any spam or any nastiness for you as far as email and stuff goes. All it's doing is it's signing you up so that every time we post a new episode of the show, a new review, a new blog, any kind of content on the site, you're going to get an email in your email box that'll show what it is. So it'll help you to keep up with what's going on GameOnPodcast.com.
Absolutely. And John is putting out some great, I guess you could call them bonus reviews in a sort of way, but
yeah.
He's putting out some written reviews that are really good and better than anything I could do, which is why he's doing them.
Okay. So I'll be bringing you more of those. We've got a little bit of a backlog of games we'd like to review and get out to you guys. So we'll be putting some of those in the written form. So be sure to go to GameOnPodcast.com and enter your email address in there and subscribe to our website.
And before we close out the Game On Inbox, we do have a correction from our last episode about Gen Con. I know. Someone in the podcast, not named Cody, mentioned that there was a special badge at Gen Con you could get that would just give you access to the dealer's hall.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I was thinking about Origins, and because we just came from Origins, and they do have some kind of a wristband there at Origins where you can just get into the dealer hall for a cheap price. The best you can do at Gen Con regarding that, and we want to start off by thanking Justin Moore for sending us an email and asking us this question.
Thank you for telling us that John is wrong, Justin. It's always a good thing.
Yeah, because we really need more ways to show that John is wrong.
You do like Power Grid.
We have 24 previous episodes to show
true.
That. And so the best, unfortunately, that you can do at Gen Con if you want to get kind of the cheap price and you know maybe not have to pay the full badge cost is that on Sunday they have like a family deal where you can get, I believe, up to four people into the convention, like a family of four, for $28 for the entire family.
Ain't bad.
Yeah, and so that's a shortened amount of time as far as dealer hall time. I think the dealer hall's open from 10 to 4 instead of 10 to 6, but it'll give you access on that day to everything that the convention has to offer for a cheaper price. So if you're local or if you just want to go for one day, that's a real good deal. But Justin, sorry about that. There is no just dealer hall only badge, but I think it would be a really good idea.
Well, just because you think it's a good idea doesn't mean it exists.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
Could you kick me a few more times?
And since we've completely crushed John's soul, we'll go ahead and close out the Game On Inbox for this episode and move into our big deal shut up, which is called New Edition.
All right. The big deal.
As far as deals go, this one's pretty big. right. Well, this episode's big deal. New Edition is a aptly named one as we talk about new editions of RPGs and board games.
Did you like the little track from New Edition there, the Mr. Telephone Man?
I didn't hate it.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I figured you'd say you hated it.
No. It was fine.
All right.
It doesn't beat the Mystery Science Theater 3000 clip from last episode.
Oh, that
that's
going to
be the
one.
Best one.
I like that one.
But anyway, about new editions. With RPGs, you see it more than board games, but we thought we'd talk about it and talk about why you should, or actually why you shouldn't, go back to the new, or go back, go to the,
back to the future.
Let's go forward to go back. Yes. Go to new editions. And the biggest one is the famous, air quote, edition war between Dungeons & Dragons 3rd edition and 4th edition.
Dun, dun, dun.
And this generated quite a bit of heat in 2007 at Gen Con when they announced 4th edition.
I got a great t-shirt, though.
So did I. This is a fine t-shirt. Yeah. It generated a lot of kind of rough feedback because many gamers thought that, A, it didn't really, a revision wasn't necessary at this time, and B, they had already kind of been through the 3.0 to 3.5 revision, and they were still feeling a little burned from that. And I don't think Wizards quite anticipated the amount of people that just kind of turned their backs on the new edition and didn't go forward, because I think they thought there was going to be, oh yeah, there'll be some holdouts, but you know, the majority of the gamers will come along with us, and I don't think that happened.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they picked up some new gamers, but I think they lost a really good chunk. I mean, I know, like I said, we've talked many episodes that I think they're really struggling financially because they're just trying to pull all these things out of their hats and make it work. And I think a lot of people just discovered, you know, these rules were for 3.5, they're working fine, and we're going to stay with it. So
I think we've become a culture that's really sensitive to the money grab, mm-hmm. and of being marketed to, because we're just, especially as Americans, we're just marketed to every single day, whether you're getting on the internet or you're turning on your television, billboards, you know, you're always being advertised to. And so I think when you look at a game that came out in the early mid 70s, original D&D, and then to see that from then until 1989, I think, is when the second edition came out, right? I mean, that's a huge amount of time. And then from 1989 to 2003, when the...
2000.
Sorry, yeah, 2000 when 3.0 came out. You know, that's another pretty large chunk of time. And then 3.5 comes out in 2003, and then 4.0 comes out. And I think people start to raise their eyebrows and go, what's the real motivation behind this change, you know, other than to keep some RPG designers employed and make some money. You know?
Right. And I'm not one of those. I mean, there are some people who say, you know, oh, they're just doing it to make money. Well yeah, they're a company.
That's okay. Yeah.
I don't fault them for it. Yeah. But I can see where you're coming from, where it just seems like too soon. And the fact that they were actually still selling 3.5 products for that year leading up to 4th edition.
Yeah.
Still actively selling. I mean, that didn't make a lot of sense to me, you know? And so many things to me kind of just added to the snowball of 4E not doing very well. They had a lot of digital features they promised up front. Pretty much none of them were available at launch, and they've pretty much openly come out and said they're not doing about half of them that was promised. And I've played 4th edition as a home game now for probably about a month or two now, and on a regular basis I see how the game works, and I still like the system. I think it's a good system, but I'm starting to see where people say it's, again, air quote, it's not D&D.
Yeah.
It's it seems to me like they almost, not to be too dramatic, but they almost kind of sold a bit of their soul for perfectly balanced game mechanics.
Oh yeah.
Because, like, we play, and the game, it's faster to prep, it runs faster, but it just seems so just, you're just going through the motions, and a wizard doesn't seem that much different from a fighter. You just have kind of a different set of tactical powers, but it all feels the same. Whereas with 3rd edition and earlier ones, yeah, the rules were a bit chunkier and clunkier, but it had some flavor to it. 4th edition just seems very sterile, and I'm a game master who, I get into it, and I try to infuse some story and 4th edition, just like I said, it runs so well. It's almost like it's balanced to death.
Yeah. It seems a lot more mechanical, you know, like it's mechanic, and they work all really, really well, but you lose something in that.
Yeah.
Whereas a lot of the RPGs that are a lot more story driven, just designed that way. There are mechanics there, but you don't care as much about them. But it seems like in D&D 4th edition, you have no choice but to care about the mechanics, or you have no game.
Exactly. And to me, this is the first time where I'm definitely, I'm part of like the cult of the new. You know, if something's new coming out, it's like, well, I got a Switch. You know, it's new. It's
I wouldn't know anything about that.
No,
it's like
not
games
at,
at my bookshelves of brand new games.
But this is the first time where I've played 4E, and I'm like, you know, this is fun. I can play this. I don't hate this game. But if I had my druthers, I would probably go back to 3.5. And I've never been like that about any game where I'm like, yeah, you know, the older one's actually a little bit better.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's kind of scary almost.
And, you know, I think your opinion is almost a little different from a lot of other gamers because it's almost the opposite. It's like the folks that say, well, I knew I watched a U2 concert back when they were playing in a club, and you know, and but now they've just sold out and it's not any good, you know. And I think you get a lot more folks like that of, oh, well, I played real D&D, and they don't like the new version of things. So
yeah,
that's interesting. So are you gonna move, go back? Are you gonna revert?
I'm going to finish out at least my kind of 4E game, because like I said, I still like running. I still like playing it. It's not like I detest it, you know, for my player's sake and to finish it out. I'll probably do that, but I may actually go back to 3.5 or even Pathfinder, which some people are kind of jokingly calling 3.75 because it still kind of has that core mechanic, but they changed enough of it to where it's a different system. I mean, fourth edition compared to first, second, and third, the natural progression just seems to go out the window, because from the basic set to first edition, you kind of see, okay, you know, they built on things first to second, second to third. They're still building on core concepts. Fourth edition, just out of left field, is this completely new thing, and it seems to only keep elements of D&D just because they had to, otherwise they would have had a mass revolt. I mean, it's just so radically different.
Yeah. So. Well, and that sort of brings us to, I guess, a question of, and sort of the point of this discussion is, why do companies choose to make new editions of games other than the make money part of it? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can always say that Ticket to Ride edition is made to make money, right. You know, that you want to keep a franchise going. So that's a given that's going to be the case. But other than that, you know, what is the aim when you're trying to make a new edition of a game? So, I mean, starting with role-playing games, and we can sort of use 3.5 to 4E as a, you know, an archetype, I guess. What were the things about 3.5 do you think that they wanted to change in, you know, in fourth edition?
Well,
specifically,
I think they wanted it, and I know you said apart from the making money thing, but this is almost a mechanic that's twofold. I think they wanted to make the entry level a lot lower. Because 3.5, it's a playable game. I wouldn't say it's hard, but it has a learning curve. If you've never played an RPG, there's a definite learning curve. And with 4, that curve goes way down. I'm not saying it's dumber or anything, but it is a lot easier to pick up.
Yeah.
And I think they really wanted to attract new players that way and kind of refresh their base, which is no fault to them.
Do you think they were looking for newer players or younger players? Were they actually looking for both?
I think both. Okay. I mean, I think they were trying to get that Magic crowd, which I think is a little bit younger than their D&D crowd. I think they really wanted to get them and kind of get them in and get them in that young age. And
we've talked about it before, the World of Warcraft crowd, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The MMORPG.
You know, they tailored it to that means, you know, love it or hate it, there's definite influences there, and they're not all bad. But I think they also did it. They wanted to streamline the rules. 3.5 had a lot of clunky bits to it. Once you learn the system, like Kaylin, she's an encyclopedia with this.
Really?
The other night, I was just asking her something. She knew the answer. So I flipped open the book and just asked her, like, what's the difficulty class for? And she just knew
she
it.
She just knew it.
Huh? Oh, yeah, 25. I'm like, what? What is wrong with you?
And that's why you're in love with her.
That's when I knew she was the one. But I think they wanted just a streamlined thing, even throwing out the simulationist rules. Like in D&D 4th edition, by the book, if you have two squares next to each other, and one square in the game is, you know, high up on a cliff, say 60 feet or something, by the original rules, an effect that would target those two squares would get, like a fireball would get those two squares, even though they're in the game world, like 60 feet above one or the other.
Right.
So it's kind of like, what? You know?
That was in the original first edition rules?
No, the original fourth edition.
Oh, okay. That's
weird. Yeah, you know, just for the sake of ease, you know, so you don't have to calculate height. And since then, they've kind of, you know, put in the idea of, you know, elevation squares, but as written, beginning on, elevation was not a part of it. So,
so lowering the entry level point was an important. I mean, obviously, story was not the big consideration, because anybody who looks at that is going to say, well, that couldn't happen.
Right.
and how many, you know, RPG discussions have people had in for over the years of, you know, well, that wizard spell couldn't do that because he was standing in the wrong place. Sure. And
they definitely went from simulation to kind of an arcade mode, you know, something you can pick up and play. And that's not a bad thing. But D&D players, I think, you know, with that 30-year kind of gravitas behind it. Whoa. Speaking of they expected a certain thing, and this kind of almost video gamey D&D kind of turned off a lot of people.
It's almost kind of an attention span thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could make the big sort of sweeping statements about our society that we've become a society that's got a shorter attention span, and we have less time to spend on particular pursuits. So I guess that could have been a part of it as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure if they went that deep when they're sitting around the boardroom going, let's make an RPG.
Well, one other reason, and this is the one I think that probably backfired on them the most, was with third edition of the D20 system. You had that open gaming license where pretty much any company could make materials for it as long as they put this kind of blurb in the back of their book. And you had all these new ideas, and they weren't necessarily balanced. Like, if you just let any old riffraff into your game, you know, you could have these unbalanced characters like, well, I'm a first level dragon who can do that. You know, you had to pick and choose, but with fourth edition, they kind of slammed that door shut and pretty much said, you know, they have a license available, but it's ridiculously expensive. If I remember right. And only a few companies really picked it up, but they say pretty much everything comes through us and will be official. So, you know, that anything you get in Dragon Magazine will now be perfectly balanced for your game, and that was their selling point. But it turned out to be bad because they weren't getting that infusion of creativity from their fans, and they were, you know, everything was just coming from quote unquote the man, and they weren't, you know, you didn't have the depth and the breadth of options of things you could put in your game.
Well, and I maybe they had a whole lot of complaints about balance, but you know, I find that a lot of RPG players that I've talked to, that's part of the fun is, you know, you create these absolutely crazy characters and these crazy situations that are, you know, you min-max to the max so that you can do the cool move and, you know, so.
And even though that's not my cup of tea, it just seems like they build it in a way so where everything's official, and a lot of it seems like they oriented it towards organized play and RPGA and sort of that thing where it's like, you know, this is all available for you. And you know, I don't want to say it's the communist game system, but it's kind of like they're controlling everything that goes out, and they're deciding what is best for you. There's not a lot of fan-made stuff out there that, you know, they would allow. So.
Yeah. So if you're an RPG player, and at this point, we're so late in the conversation that I think most folks that play D&D have probably played 4th edition, and have made their choice as to whether they're going to switch over or not. But... Now, let's go a step farther into another system like something like Deadlands, you know, which worked off of a different system and then was reapplied with the Savage World system with Deadlands Reloaded. You know, what are some good questions to ask or some good things to consider when you want to make an upgrade or an edition change? I mean, it's not like you're spending hundreds of dollars to change editions on a game, but what are some things you might want to consider if you're going to think about making a change?
Well, you want to look at the investment you've already made, and if you look at that and you kind of look at the changes from one edition to the next and it's pretty minimal, you can stay with the old edition. You know, like we always jokingly say, it's like no one's going to come and take your old books away,
right?
You know,
there's no police that's going to storm into your house.
You own them, you can run. If you want to run D6 Star Wars from the 80s, God love you, you can do it. But like with the Deadlands thing, see what your group's used to. If your group really likes the system and really is just, you know, they've learned it and it works well for your group, then by all means, keep it. I mean, you can look at the new books for ideas and such, but to me, it's almost like if your group is very comfortable with it and they have no real rules problems or you have house rules to cover what you don't like, then you're fine. I'm saying if you have a new group that maybe you're trying out Deadlands, well, then try the new version because they've probably put in gameplay tweaks that will help that. Like, you know, even with what I just said with 3, 5, and 4, if there was a group that had never played D&D before, I would steer them toward 4th edition.
Yeah.
Because they don't have any of those preconceived notions. You know, 4th edition will be good for them. It's current. They can find games. Good for them. So
I think that's probably true for most kinds of games too. You know, I'm just now starting to possibly get into playing War Machines, mm-hmm. a miniatures game, and there's a whole, you know, rule set for that that's been upgraded a couple of times. But the early next year they're coming out with the Mark II set of rules, where they've made some huge wholesale changes in how the game's played and how point values are calculated and things like that. And you know, and so I have to ask myself the question as a new player, do I want to start learning the old rules, or do I want to wait and learn the new rules? I actually have a PDF of the new rules. And, you know, so I think one key thing when you're talking about a collectible card game or a miniatures game, especially, and even for D&D specifically, you have to look at organized play as well.
Mm-hmm. That if that's something you're interested in.
If you're interested in organized play, like RPGA or the Magic Pro Tour, or even the Friday Night Magic events, or War Machine tournaments, things of that nature, you've got
to
be
current
in the current rule set, whether you like it or not. I mean, if you want to be in those tournaments, there's, you know, Magic, you can occasionally find like the Legacy tournaments, but even those Legacy tournaments are going to probably use the newest rule set.
Exactly.
So that's going to be a consideration as well. But if you're just playing a home game, and like Cody said, I think you can sort of stick with what you have if you like it. So mm-hmm. it's all about what's fun. So some other reasons why you might want to create a new edition of a game, and why games have been created, is upgraded components. And I'm thinking more of, you know, board games mm-hmm. at this point. Upgraded book, I guess. if you have a
look at that game. First edition rule book, and then look at that fourth edition.
It's an upgrade. Yeah, step. It's nice. It's nice. But games like Talisman is a good example mm-hmm. of a board game that's had multiple editions now, four or five, and how if you look at the components and the rules from the original game, and now the brand new version from a Fantasy Flight, there's a huge difference.
Yeah. And the fact that there was so long between the between the third and fourth editions before they reprinted it, that people were paying hundreds and hundreds of dollars to get the game. And I mean, I like the game. It's got a lot of, you know, sentimental value. I mean, it's not that groundbreaking a game, but I mean, people were just clamoring for it. And then this new edition came out, and that actually solved a lot of that problem.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of board games. I can think of a couple off the top of my head.
Titan.
One being Titan. Fortress America is one that, mm-hmm. that has not really, there's been no new edition of that made. But yeah, Titan's a good example of one that, yeah, up until the new version of that came out from Eagle Games, it was really hard to find a copy of that. And if you did find a copy, it was several hundred dollars.
Oh, yeah.
And you're paying $700 for a bunch of really crummy cardboard chits, you know? And so I think the new versions of the game allow a new set of players. You mentioned like the younger players or the newer players for D&D. It's the same thing for board games, is that if you have a new version of something, it allows those players, those new players to the game, to be able to jump in at a price point that they can deal with, and with really cool components too.
Yep.
So there have been lots of games that have done that component wise. I can think of like a Wits and Wagers is one.
That was kind of a weird shift that they did, because we both bought the first edition of the game.
Yep.
With the it had the, we call it the mouse pad. It's this really nice mat. And I think we actually talked with Dominic at Origins a few years ago, and he mentioned that they were just losing money on that.
Yeah, I guess so. In order to keep their cost basis low, they changed the material that the mat's made out of, mm-hmm. and they changed. Used to have these little cubes for your bedding, and you put those with a plastic chip, and now they have just bedding chips. Which makes a lot of sense given your limitation on your bedding for each round. And they also tweaked some of the rules as well. So. Games like Formula D, that's another game that falls in the category of, you know, the old Formula Day and all the editions of that from years and years ago. You know, now new players can get the Asmodee Editions version of Formula D and can enjoy the game, and, you know, can get all the cool dice, and they've even added and enhanced some rules for that. So anytime a new edition comes out, you have the opportunity to get some new rules and some new tweaks to things. And I think the game company that's able to preserve the classic nature of an original game and then add on some new stuff that will make it better without screwing with the original feel of the game. I think that's a
easy there.
Another gravitas in the mic there. That's a really good thing for a game company to be able to do.
And I think Fantasy Flight did a really good job, not just with Talisman, but with Cosmic Encounter as well.
Oh yeah.
I thought that's one where they kept the old feel, but really gave it a facelift and made it a modern game.
Yep, absolutely. So there's really no take-home lesson from this discussion as far as, you know, what you need to now go out and do, dear listeners. But we just wanted to talk about this because, you know, if you are a new gamer especially, there's a lot of options open to you as far as new editions of games. And so, you know, you might want to pick up the newest edition, do a little bit of research, find out if that, you know, old edition might have some you know, charm that you want to kind of latch onto there. So we're in, I believe, it's kind of a golden renaissance of gaming, especially board gaming. I feel like RPGs are actually still going pretty strong. How would you feel about that? I know that the last 10 to 15 years, board games have just taken off, and we're seeing more than we ever have before.
Well, I've mentioned where I think RPGs are still doing well, but they're really leaning more toward that indie RPG style. You know, it's like with Wizards kind of dropping the ball on D&D, it's not necessarily the big titan yet. It's the biggest and makes the most money, but it's probably not the most popular anymore. Mm. You know, you have games like Savage Worlds and things like that. They're just coming up and really challenging D&D for that spot. So
yeah,
there's a wide open thing, and use me as a cautionary tale. You know, when 4th came out, and I still, as a disclaimer, say I still like the game. I will play 4th edition, but it may not be my edition of choice. Is that, you know, I ran out, bought all the books, and did all that, and I didn't really do any research. I just got kind of distracted by the shinies.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really do my homework, but more so with RPGs than board games, really do your homework and talk with your group. Because remember, it's not just you that plays the RPG, and hopefully it's not just you and another person, because that's lone wolfing, and we do not condone that.
No. We're anti-lone wolfing here.
That's right. So talk with your group and find out what works best for you, and new is not always better.
Wow. You're right. That's a tough one for me, though, because I'm a cult,
oh,
of the,
so am
I'm
I.
A cult of the new kind of a guy.
Now board games, I think you're absolutely right. Yeah, board games, I say 90% of the time, get the new edition if you can, because it's usually better. But RPGs, lean back, do your homework a little bit.
The whole point of this, as always, is play what's fun.
That's right.
What's fun for you. If it's your old stuff, then play it. If it's brand new stuff, then do it too. So I think that about wraps up our big deal for this episode. That was a good discussion.
It was. RPGs.
I know.
See, it was
fun.
Did
you like it?
I know all the board game people out there are like, shut up about the RPGs. But
and all the RPG people are going, it's about time.
Yeah, I know.
We like to give a good balance. We're all about well-rounded gaming on Game On, so we're going to get a good balance of all that kind of stuff. Hey, once I start playing War Machine, we're going to have to wedge a new segment into there.
Well, we've got a good balance coming up on BioTrader tonight. We've got a board game and an RPG, so why wait? Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Buy, try, or deny.
Game reviews for the common gamer.
It's that simple. Well, all right, dear listeners, it is time for Buy, Try, or Deny. And as we mentioned, it's a double feature, so you get twice the review for your money.
That's two times.
Zero.
That's one more than we usually do.
Nicely done. So we're going to start it off with a new word game called Amuse-A-Maze, and here to give you the skinny is the Casey Kasem of Game On with Cody and John, John Richard.
And he writes.
And he writes.
Bob from Lenexa, Kansas.
From where?
Lenexa, Kansas is the first thing that came to my mind. I don't know.
All right,
so Amuse-A-Maze is another in a long line of very nice word games that exist in the gaming hobby. Everything from Scrabble to Boggle to some of the newer ones from Out of the Box Publishing, like Word on the Street. Amuse-A-Maze is a different sort of an animal, I guess, if you will, in this genre, because it's basically a race game, but it is the way that you move around the board is via making words. And so that makes it very interesting, and it, you know, it's called Amuse-A-Maze because it's a maze, and I guess it's occasionally amusing. So,
nice.
In the rules of the game itself, the sheet that comes with it, it actually says in the rules, okay, we're all impatient to start playing and not waste our time on a bunch of complicated rules, so let's keep it simple.
I like it.
Cody loves this.
Read that three more times.
Okay. I should read that at the beginning of every rules review. So the whole purpose of this game is that you're trying to work your way through this maze, and you want to hit certain squares on target boards that have different colors on them. So there's four different colors, and depending on how many players you have, you want to hit a certain number of boards. It might be two or might be three. And all you have to do is just cross over one of these colored spaces, and then you're going to get a card that represents that color. Once you've collected a certain number of cards in one of each color, then you win the game. And so there's a start board. The game has kind of a modular setup. So it has all of these maze boards. It has a grid of letters on it. And you're going to set these up. So it's a random arrangement that is different for every game. So that really is a nice thing for replayability. And so it's a grid of letters, but you also have drawn on the cards these little hedgerows. So there's you know, places that will kind of block your path where you have to go around. So it's just like a little like a topiary maze. And so you're going to set up a
topiary?
Yeah.
That was nice.
You know topiary, right?
Yeah, an arboreal confusion.
Oh, very nice.
Thank you.
The expansion should be Amuse Maze, arboreal confusion. So you're going to set up the board based upon the arrangement that's on in the rule set here. You'll have a certain number of boards based upon the number of players. 15 boards for 2 players, 16 for 3 players, 18 for 4 to 6 players. And you're going to arrange these target boards along with your start board. And the start board just has like a big start square where all of your pawns go. The little pawns are little plastic things that look like question marks. I don't really know why they're question marks, but that's what they are. And so you're going to start there. And then you have a whole bunch of tiles in a big bag. Now, on these player boards, on the maze boards, in addition to having the letters on them, there's some squares that just are blue, and they don't have any letter on them at all. So at the beginning of the game, you're going to take these tiles out of this bag, and you're going to randomly put tiles on all of the blue spaces. So that plus the random arrangement of the boards makes for a completely random setup every single time. So you're going to get a different game every time that you play. And so you're going to start at that start board, and on your turn, in order to move, you need to spell a word. And so you can move diagonally, you can move orthogonally, however you want to go. But
this is vocabulary on with Cody and John.
What?
You're quite the sesquipedalian over there.
I have no idea what you're saying. but you do need to spell a word. And so you can spell a two-letter or a three-letter word if you want to. And then you always have the option, if you can't spell a word, to move one space in any direction. And just moving that one space actually can open up a lot of opportunities to spell words. You're also going to get some bonuses if you happen to spell a word that has 5 or more letters. Then you get to go again and make a bonus move. Also, on some of these target boards, there are letters, some of the more difficult letters like the Q, which actually in this game, the Q and U are together as one sort of one letter. Where if you make a word that uses one of those letters, then you'll also get to go another turn. But you have a maximum of 2 bonus turns every turn. So the most you'll ever get to go is 3 turns in a row. So you're just going to continue to do this and jet around the board. Now, you're going to start off, in addition to the tiles that are on the board, every player starts off with 3 tiles in front of them. And those are randomly drawn from the bag. And so when you are on the board and you spell a word and land on one of the tiles that's already on the board, you're going to pick that letter up, and that'll kind of go into your supply. Then on a later turn, if you want to spell a word, but maybe one of the letters is wrong, and you can replace it with one of the ones that's the tiles that's sitting in front of you. And you would just put that on the board and then move your pawn over top of it. And so this allows for the board to be constantly changing with the letters and the arrangements that are on the board. And so you're just going to continue on. That's basically the whole mechanic of the game, is that you're going to keep spelling words and trying to get around to get on these target boards. Now, there's one other element in the game that's kind of an interesting one called the gardener card, which everybody gets one at the beginning of the game. And it's a guy that has these big hedge clippers. And that will allow you once per game to cut through a hedgerow so that you don't have to go around it. So this can be a really nice strategic thing if there's a particular place you want to get to and you don't want to go all the way around and take 3 turns to do it. So that is basically Amuse Maze, and you'll just get as many target cards as you need to, and whoever gets that first is the winner. So that's the race element of the game. So, Cody, what did you think of Amuse Maze when we played it? We played a 3-player game.
Yeah, it was fun. I like word games. I really like playing Scrabble and maybe Boggle and Upwords to a lesser degree, but I really like word games. And this one was fun. I think this one would really benefit, and I actually say this about a lot of games. This would be good with a timer, like a minute timer, because we played a 3-player game, and we all were just taking so long kind of plotting out every movement. And I think if you had a little stress involved in this game as far as, like, you got to pick something and you've got, 30 seconds, you've got a minute to do it, would really add, because the game is fun, but it can really drag on unless you have a set time limit, I think.
Yeah. I think that to harken back to a game that we just reviewed on the show, which is Word on the Street, which does use a timer, and I think it uses it in a really good way because it's a similar sort of thing. On your turn in that game, you're trying to find the best word to be able to get the most letter tiles, but you know, you got to meet the timer, and you know, you got to do it before the timer's over with. So if you end up picking a bad word, you know, too bad for you. It's the same thing here. If you give your players 15 minutes to stare at the board and try to come up with different words, it ends up being a bit of a slog. So that, I think that's a real good house rule to incorporate. But I enjoyed the game as well.
It was fun.
It's fun. It plays pretty quickly as long as everybody's moving along and right. and spelling the words. The mechanic where you're trading out the tiles and you have a little bit of control over where you're going, I think is very interesting. And the way that they've designed the target boards and the different letters that are around those, you can almost see the pathway of some of the letters. Like there's some words I think they were thinking that you would probably end up spelling.
Yeah.
But those tiles give it a nice degree of randomness.
It's a fun game. I enjoy playing it.
So Amuse Amaze, buy, try, or deny?
It's going to be a try for me. Word games are not for everyone. And I think this is a solid one, but like I said, it may not be for everyone. And I think with the timing element and the spelling element, this is a good one to try on your group. It's got some good qualities, but like I said, not for everyone. But I had a good time, and I really enjoyed it. So if we were to throw that back at you, John, Amuse Amaze, buy, try, or deny.
I'm also going to give this one a try, but it's a real solid try. Like it's almost towards the try plus.
Wow.
It's a
husky try.
It's try with a smile.
There you go.
Because I thought it was a really good, solid game, and it's a clever idea. It's nothing like I've ever really seen in a game before, which I always like that. I like when I see things that are just
new. Very unique.
Yeah. And so I think you should definitely give it a try. This is from, I forgot to mention this at the beginning, I apologize. This is from HL Games, and it's designed by Ethan Goffman. And HL Games is a pretty small publisher. Mm-hmm. I think they've got a couple of other little games out, but it's sort of a self-published thing. The component quality, I think, on the game is really good for a more or less a self-published game. I think if you get an opportunity to check this out at your local game store, or you can check it out online, we'll link to the in the show notes to the company. I think it's definitely worth a try. So, and if you like word games, I think this might be a buy for you.
Yeah.
So that's a good one. Amuse Amaze.
But that's not all. We've got yet another review for you.
The double feature. So what are we moving on to now?
We are moving on to the Wickedly Errant Game System, or WEGS, to you, our friends.
Those of you in the know.
In the know, wink, wink. So John has rested his voice for a whole 10 seconds, and he is here to give you the skinny on his first RPG purchase.
That's right.
Well, with the intent of actually GMing.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. I have you know books for Serenity and D&D.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff,
yeah. But you're going to run a game of this.
I am.
You're going to break into the upper echelon of GMing with WEGS, and he's going to tell you all about it.
Yep, and we'll just go ahead and give this, I guess, pseudo disclaimer to start off with here is that we have not played like our own home game of this yet.
Not yet,
and but we will because
John is preparing very studiously,
right, to do my first stint at GMing, and I'm sure we'll be covering that on a future episode.
It's going to be fun. It's going to be so fun.
But we wanted to definitely talk about this game because we picked it up at Origins this year, and WEGS, or the Wickedly Errant Game System, is by GameWit Games, and it's designed by, get this name, L. Willie Wickman, or Larry Wickman, who we had the opportunity to talk to.
And great guy.
Really
funny
great guy.
Yeah.
Yep, and definitely a labor of love for Larry and for his wife, and I think it was a whole family affair. Mm-hmm. It seemed like there was a lot of folks at the booth there. And it's a game that is sort of a simplified RPG system. And having never done an RPG review on the show here before, this is not going to be my typical review where here's the rules, here's
all right,
how your turn works. Pipe down.
I'm sorry.
I'm just going to give you sort of the flavor of the game. So the flavor of this game is D&D style fantasy adventure with kind of a casino flair to it. And in chapter one of the WEGS book, which is the kind of basic book, is called WEGS 101 Old School.
School with a K.
School with a K, an intro to the Wickedly Errant Game System. And chapter one is called Odds and Gods, Baby. And it says, I'll just read a little section here. WEGS is about odds and gods. Just like the casino game craps, players are invested on so many different levels. So many different levels. In italics.
Very nice.
It's about the player's sense of adventure, their finite resources, their reliance or defiance with the other players, their determination to survive gallantly, and inevitably, the fickle nature of the dice. From beginning to end, the adventure is the game. Just like craps, Weggs has its own lingo. As you read this chapter, I won't read the whole thing, but you'll come across some jargon that might cause you a little confusion. Our advice is just to keep reading through it. We'll circle back to explain it in later chapters. The important thing about this first chapter is to get familiar with what Weggs is about, all about from the beginning to end, and that's odds and gods, baby. And I think the gods they're referring to are the gods of luck or the mm-hmm. gods of the dice. And so the game is very much about letting the dice control things. It's all about the roll.
Did you hear that?
Hmm.
There's a bunch of Euro gamers having a heart attack and falling over.
Exactly.
What?
But yeah, so you know, it even goes on and just says that Weggs is about getting a group of friends together for some real live face-to-face adventure gaming. Unlike traditional board games where folks roll dice and move playing pieces around on a board, Weggs players create heroic personas called ARCs, short for archetypes. Again, that's with a K.
Yeah.
And then go off the board in search of adventure. And so that's really what it is. And it's a very quick system as far as creating characters. The game uses 2d6 and 2d10. So, and that's all you really need for the game. And so when you roll up your character, you're going to roll all four of these dice. And so that gives you a number between something and something. It's like
you're the scientist.
4 and 20, I don't know, but fail on the math there.
4 and 32.
Okay, there you go.
So look at that, kids. I did math. All this and much more on Game On with Cody.
Good job. And so that's what you're going to use to roll up your stats. And then based upon those stats, you can assign different values to your different traits and things like that. And what they call your strengths. So you have your stats and your strengths. And I'm not going to go into the details of it, but the basics is it's really simple. And here's what I mean by really simple. When we went to Origins this year and we wanted to play in a demo game of this game, Larry's wife handed us a couple of cards and said, okay, let's roll you up a character. Within 3 minutes,
yep.
We were sitting at the table with our character.
Yep.
And so, I mean, I think that you can go as deep as you want to with this game. If you want to create some big epic sweeping character with a big backstory, that's fine. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's what this game is really going for.
This is the casino style. You nailed it. I mean, it's casino style, and it's, I would even say, Adventures into the Beer and Pretzels kind of thing. This is a get rowdy, have fun, roll some dice. Get together with your friends, you know. You're not doing the next Robert Jordan epic here.
Right. And in modern role-playing games, and I think in the newest version of D&D and a lot of the other games that have come out recently, we like to talk about storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this RPG is about collaborative storytelling. And the DM is there not to be an adversary, help you to tell a good story.
That's right.
That is not the way Weggs works.
The DM is the enemy.
The DM is totally the enemy. He is the house, and the house always wins. When we did this demo game at Origins, Larry ran the game, and he was actually holding one of the dice sticks. I forget
what they're called.
It's like a croupier stick or something like that. The dice sticks that the casino craps players play. And he was, I mean, it was great. He was whipping that thing around and tapping people's miniatures with it,
it was so funny.
It was great. And the game, when you play a combat round, is divided up into what are called innings.
Yep.
And so the top of the inning is where all the players play, and I don't think there's any real complicated initiative system. You just go from left to right or whatever, and then the bottom of the inning is when all of the NPCs come and try to whack you. It's even so when you're using miniatures, it's not even realistic the way that's set up too, because the character's hit points are going to be represented by poker chips, and so your monster that you're fighting might be sitting on a stack of 15 poker chips. And that's just the way he'll move around the board and everything. So you kind of always are aware of that. And so when you create your character in the game, there are 4 different archetypes that you can choose from: warrior, ranger, trickster, and scholar. And they're all going to have different kind of abilities and strengths and things like that. And you're also going to have special abilities that can activate each round, or that can be like a standing ability. And those are represented by cards. So when you buy the sort of basic pack for this game, you'll get the book, and then you're also going to get a deck of cards, which are going to represent each of the things that the arcs can do. And you might have three or four of these in your hand. If you're a magic user, then it'll be spells that can activate. Even if you're a fighter, there might be some special kind of invulnerability thing or some power attack that you can do that you can lay on the table. So there's some things that are going to require you to spend some points to be able to do that. Now, points in this game are kept with poker chips, and they're called spoints. And so if, for example, if you're a magic user, at the beginning of each round or inning, if you want to keep using a particular effect, then you have to do to pay a spoint into the house or to the GM. And this is a phase called the Spanty. That's has nothing to do with women's underwear.
Wow.
It's basically just the Spoint Ante.
Late night with Cody and John.
There you go. And actually, when they were selling this game at the convention, they were selling these brass or copper goblets that the GM was using. And I bought one, as you can see, Cody's clinking it there. There you go.
There we go.
And that's where the Spanty goes, you know. And so, and when we were playing this at the convention, people were just tossing these chips at him, and they were just flying into this cup and everything. It is a raucous affair. It is meant to be fast and furious, and let the dice do the talking. And you know, there's not a lot of fudging. A lot of it is just you let the dice read what the dice will read.
And you need a really good GM in this case, or what is the. We affectionately call him the Stick Man.
Yeah.
Because he has the big casino stick.
We're going to talk to Larry at Gen Con. We'd like to maybe get that put in the book, that we think a Stick Man would be a good thing to call him. But, you know.
Or Stick Woman.
Actually, the GM is called the Creator with a K.
Yeah, I like Stick Man.
I like Stick Man.
With a K.
There you go. But anyway, I mean, the flavor of this game is just fast and furious and just flying through the rounds. And the little adventure they put in the back of the book is called Dwarf Walks into a Bar. and
the Halfling Ducks.
It's got a little bit of story to it, but it's mainly just combat. I mean, that's the majority of it. And it brings back that old school feeling of going into the dungeon, killing the monsters, taking their stuff, and just having the dice just flying, and having you be an adversary against the GM.
Yep.
Well, you can already hear from my enthusiasm that I had a lot of fun with this. Mm-hmm. So Cody Weggs, buy, try, or deny.
It's going to be, this is a new one.
Okay.
The Try++.
Try++.
Because this is role-playing gamers in mind. As you said, it will not appeal to the let's tell a story crowd or the intense simulation gamer crowd, but for everyone else, this is a lot of fun. You get a lot for your money in this case, and this is the first game where I think even more than like Kobolds Ate My Baby, it's got that beer and pretzels casino feel, and everyone's just having a good time. This is a game where you sit back with a beer or adult beverage of your choice and just go to town and have a lot of fun. This is something I would play. I'm looking forward to when John runs it, and it's all about just having fun, and it's a good light RPG, probably the best one you can have for your collection. So I give it a hearty Try++, and if nothing else, go to their booth, because there's a great bunch of folks, and you will definitely get your entertainment value worth, because they are really funny.
Yep.
So future Game Master John Richard for the Wickedly Errant Game System, or WEGS, buy, try, or deny.
Well, I bought it already, but it's a buy for me. Is definitely a buy. I'll even go past the Try++ to a buy for this one, and the reason is that it's a pretty low price point. I mean, I think it's $25 for the book and the deck of cards that you're going to get and that kind of stuff. But for me, I'm not someone who has a lot of time to play in a big campaign. I mean, Cody's mentioned in this episode his D&D campaign. I'm not able to really go to that. Sorry. So I don't have a whole lot of time to commit to RPG play. And so this one is perfect. The rule book even mentions conventions a lot. So it's almost like this game is sort of semi-designed for con play.
Mm-hmm.
But for those of you who don't go to conventions, it's really designed for one-off play. You want to get a group of, I feel like playing a role-playing game. Let's call some friends up. And you can get, if you have folks that have never played a role-playing game or folks that have played lots of role-playing games, especially those folks, you can get those folks over to your house, teach them the basics of creating an arc, and get the game rolling in minutes. Mm-hmm. It's really, really fast as far as that goes. So yeah, if you're big into the long story, backstory, and storytelling, that's not what this is about. But this game, I think, recreates the feeling in an RPG setting of being in a casino.
Yep.
It's like it's standing at the craps table and rolling those dice and hoping that you get that number so you can get the chips that you're looking for. It creates that feeling in a role playing game, which I think is a ton of fun. And so I would highly recommend this one to at least pick it up and read it, because I think it'd be great. And I think if you read it, I think you're going to want to run it if you're a GM. And I think if you're not a GM, you're going to want to find someone who is, and so you can play it.
Yeah, especially if you meet the folks. It's contagious, their love for this game. So
it is, yeah.
I'd definitely give it a once over.
Yep, and that's part of it too, is that both of these games we talked about today, Muse of Maze and Wegs, are from small publishers. And when we went to the convention and talked to these folks, it is obvious that this is what they love to do, and this is what they have put their time and their resources into, and they put out some really great games. So that's a try plus plus for Wegs from Cody and a buy from me. So check out the Wickedly Errant game system.
Well, that took a lot out of us, a double feature, so I think we need to wrap up the show.
Absolutely. We've got some Hell's Kitchen to watch downstairs.
That's right. Fake restaurant.
Fake restaurant, right.
And as always, you can check us out at GameOnPodcast.com. That's the way to get pretty much all the pertinent news for Game On with Cody and John.
Yeah, be sure to subscribe to our website via our new FeedBurner feed, so just enter your email address into the website there. We'd also invite you to subscribe to our podcast via iTunes if you have not already, or via any other podcatcher that you've got out there.
If you want to email us, please email us at the Game On Inbox.
At GameOnInbox@gmail.com.
And we will get back to you lickety-split.
But, you know, we've got to get going because, you know, Gen Con's just a few
next
days.
Week.
It's next week.
I'm excited.
So we got to get all our stuff packed up in our backpack and get our black t-shirts out. And our next episode, we'll be talking to you a lot about our time at Gen Con. We'll have probably a few interviews for you. You know, we may even find that our coverage is not quite as extensive as it was at Origins, just because we want to play games.
Gen Con is our play con. Origins is our work con.
That's so right. This is our hometown con, and we just want to go and have a great time. But we'll have a lot of great coverage, and we'll talk to you all about our time at Gen Con. But that'll be coming to you in 2 weeks. And until then,
game on. All right, we have double-clicked the Game On Inbox, and we are ready to give you some great gaming news, or at least what we consider to be great gaming news. But before we proceed any farther, we have to give credit to our... One more time.